Hello, and welcome to episode 165 of SMARTS, which as we all know stands for...
So Monolithic Apple Rocks the Science!
Ooh!
Aha!
This is a continuation of your Apple-themed acronyms.
It's September, it's the month of Apple acronyms! Yes, finish the intro.
My name is Rutiger Q Podcaster, aka Trevor,
oh, and hello.
Your name is...
Julia Guglia of Internet Fame, Dash Podcaster.
Indeed. Now it's news time.
Okay!
So we got a little bit of news. There was an interview with Disney CEO, I think, Bob Iger, in I think it was the Hollywood Reporter, where he was talking about Disney's various initiatives and interests, and he talked about how, based on the, one could argue what the impetus for this is, but I think the largest factor has to be the underwhelming box office returns for Solo. That yeah. Disney will be slowing down its release of future Star Wars movies following Episode 9, which is coming out next Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've talked before about how there were all sorts of rumors going around that Disney was canceling the plans for any future Star Wars story movies and focusing entirely on finishing this trilogy and then moving on to the new series of movies by Rian Johnson and the other series of movies by the Game of Thrones guys, and not doing like an Obi-Wan movie, which has been long rumored, or a Boba Fett movie, or whatever else they might have been planning to do. Whether this report is confirmation of that, or whether it means they're still planning on doing those other movies, but they'll just be rolling them out slower,
slowly.
I don't know. I mean, I would say the safest bet at this point is that after Episode 9, there will not be a movie the following year, and then they will... do maybe the first movie in Rian Johnson's new trilogy, which we still know nothing about, and then roll out new movies, maybe like alternate that and the other trilogy from the Game of Thrones guys every 18 months to 2 years.
Yep.
At least until, you know, the box office is, you know, rock solid, has stabilized, and then maybe they can try to pick up the pace a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I there's probably a lot of reasons why Solo didn't do as well. I mean, I think the movie itself was good, but I think that the fact that it was just a few months after The Last Jedi, which itself was kind of polarizing among fans, even though it did great box office, the fact that people, that a Han Solo origin movie wasn't something that people really seemed to be clamoring for.
Yep.
And so people kind of felt like they were going to see it out of obligation,
yep,
even though they enjoyed it when they got there, by and large. I think there's a lot of factors, but it's interesting. I mean, the Marvel can do 3 movies a year now, and that's no problem. But
yep,
Star Wars can't seem to manage 1 movie a year without people just... And this is only... Like, Star Wars was gone for so long. And
yeah,
then after 2 or 3 movies, people are like, oh, man, I'm sick of Star Wars already. Like, I mean, it's apples and oranges, I guess. It has to do with the fact, I suppose, that there's so many different characters in these comic book universes with such different styles and tones and so much material in the comics to draw upon without running the risk of running the well dry, whereas with the Star Wars stuff, they're kind of, you know, they're making it up as they go along, and especially if they're going to try to stick to characters and settings that are familiar to fans, it's like, okay, now here's a Boba Fett movie, now here's, like we talked about before, here's,
right,
you know, Lobot, a Star Wars story, or whatever they could do, you know, like at a certain point, it'd be like, I guess it'd be, I don't know, the closest analogy would be like if they were just doing like, if they tried to do 2 Batman movies a year, for example, like here's Batman, now here's Batman 2, and then next year we'll do Batman, and then we'll do a Nightwing movie, and then we'll do Robin and Nightwing 2, and then we'll do, I mean, that would actually probably do really well for them, and then God knows they're planning Batgirl, Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn and the Joker, Nightwing, the Matt Reeves Batman movie. So they are planning that, but I still doubt we would get more than one of those a year. So I don't know. I mean, I'm used to there not being a lot of Star Wars around, and we'll still have the live-action show on Disney Play. We'll still have Star Wars Resistance. We'll still have comics, or at least I'll still have the comics. You don't read the comics.
Hmm.
But yeah, so I mean, it's too bad because I think, I mean, it was a 1-2 punch of The Last Jedi and Solo, I think, that they're a divisive movie, albeit a popular one, and a generally well-liked movie, but an unpopular one, you know?
Yep.
Like, the 1-2 punch was sort of not what they needed. I mean, neither movie was a failure, both critically and commercially, but one was sort of one and the other was sort of the other.
Yep.
In a way, I don't know. I mean, I guess The Last Jedi has a great Rotten Tomato score, and it made a ton of money, so it's really just a segment of the fandom online that was decrying it, and then that sort of kind of soured the soured the blue milk, I guess you could say, going into the
blue
the
milk is already sour.
Yeah, well, when you drink it, well, not when you drink it fresh from the teat, like
that's true.
Like Luke likes to do. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it seemed kind of inevitable. That would just seem to be the way the winds were blowing up over the past few months, and who knows, you know, whether this will just be a short term thing. I mean, I could point to a lot of examples where, like, a video game company releases a game that's panned, like the latest game in a new series that's terrible, and it's okay, we're going to let this franchise rest for a while. And what that actually means is just instead of doing one every year, they wait 2 years to release the next one, and then they go back to doing it every year. That could be all there is. It could just be like a 2-year break after episode 9, but then we're back to one a year.
I think they're just hesitant to put out a movie with so much speed that they face the same problems that they had in the last one, where, you know, oh, the director isn't going to work, or oh, our major cast is flaking.
Yeah, I don't think that was a question. I mean, there's a lot of stuff with Solo, but I think, I mean, yeah, that probably didn't help all the behind the scenes turmoil. Although I wonder how much of that your average Joe popcorn moviegoer is really privy to. Like how much they pay attention to director oustings.
That's true.
You know, like they're not reading. The average Joe is not going to know about this either because they're not reading the Hollywood Reporter. But I mean, yeah, I think the fact that that Lord and Miller got fired and they brought in Ron Howard has less to do with the pace that they were trying to get the movie out at, and more just to do with a creative mismatch that, yeah, they probably should have seen coming and maybe would have if they'd taken more time to vet them.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
And that has to do with the pace,
but it's not though, like they were being worked too hard at the pace, you know.
No. But, I mean, I think that they rushed into hiring a director and getting this project off the ground sooner than they should have.
I mean, maybe. But, I mean, Disney is such a huge company and they know how to do this with Marvel. Like, line up new people, bring them in. Like, bring in Ryan Coogler on Black Panther and he hits a home run first time out and hitting a home run out of the gate is not a thing.
That's a mismatch. Yeah.
But I feel like Disney as a corporate entity should be good by now at, you know, building the tracks while the train is barreling down on it. Yeah. You know, like you got to keep these things coming out. You got to keep bringing in new directors. You got to keep starting production. So like this should be good. I realize Kathleen Kennedy has nothing to do with the Marvel stuff, but Disney as a corporate entity should have an infrastructure in place for this by now. And so when it falls down, it seems like more of just like a something that everybody should have seen coming. But maybe it was just destined to happen rather than something that could have been solved with like an extra couple of months of pre-production time or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, in happier news in TV, they have cast the lead for the upcoming DC Universe Stargirl series. So here we go with trying to figure. I guess it's not quite as bad when you spell it with an E. So Breck Bessinger. Here's the Kim Basinger thing again, right? So first name Breck, which, okay. Last name either Bessinger or Bessinger. I don't know.
Oh,
I guess okay. The fact that it's Bess and not Bass doesn't really help with the quandary. Anyway, I mean, she looks like a blonde teenage all-American girl, so you can't really know. Apparently, she's been in a bunch of Nickelodeon shows. You know the kind of shows that they have. So, I mean, I don't know. She looks the part, but to hear Geoff Johns in the press release tell it like she's perfect for the part. She embodies this character, which is so important to him, and all this other stuff. So, I mean, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would just be saying that. He's literally running. Literally, he's running this show. So, and it's a show based on a character that is the most important to him. So I can't imagine he would sign off on casting just a lead unless he was happy with her. So, right. I mean, the fact that this is moving forward is exciting because I'd say I'm probably looking forward to this show more than I don't know. It's down to this and Young Justice.
Mm.
But I'm looking forward to Titans. I'm looking forward to Doom Patrol and stuff. But I think that this and the return of Young Justice are probably the DC Universe shows that I'm looking forward to most.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Young Justice. I'm looking forward to seeing Doom Patrol in live action. And I am looking forward to Stargirl, especially since you went into the backstory of how the character was created and why it means so much to Geoff Johns in the first place. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So in other TV news, we have the premiere date for the Star Trek Short Treks minisodes that they're going to be doing on CBS All Access. So they start on October 4th, so just in a couple of weeks. There'll be four of them, at least to start, that will sort of tide the fans over until the premiere of Discovery sometime early next year, February or March, I guess. It's still like 6 months away, unfortunately. So I'm trying to remember the exact order, but we'll get one focusing on Tilly, one focusing on Saru, one focusing on Harry Mudd, which will actually also be either written or directed. No, directed. What's the name of the actor? Rainn Wilson is directing that one, too, in addition to starring in it.
Oh.
And then a fourth one focusing on a new character a new Starfleet officer, and that I'm assuming this will set him up and then he'll have a bigger role in season two.
Oh, cool.
I'm assuming it won't just be a one-off, which is a smart thing to do, you know? Yeah. You've got, you know, you're arguably your most popular characters with Tilly and Saru, at least the fan favorites. And then you got Harry Mudd in there, who's sort of a fun wild card. That could be an off-the-wall story. And then you do one that's maybe a bit more dramatic and have that one be last, so that maybe it ends on a cliffhanger or a... or a teaser of some kind, a lingering mystery that then makes people want to, you know, I guess I would say makes people want to tune in, makes people want to keep paying their monthly subscription fee until the series itself starts next year. So I'm looking forward to these. I don't know how long. I think they said like 12 minutes each, basically. So like a quarter of a length of an episode.
Cute.
So added up, you're basically getting like a bonus episode.
Yeah,
running, I mean, time-wise, to tide you over.
It's not trivial. People who've been doing short films for years will tell you that a 12-minute mini film is quite an undertaking in and of itself. But then again, I mean, this is a more professional setup anyway.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to them.
Me too.
I mean, I like all those characters, and so it'll be fun to see just a little adventure. And if they keep doing this, I'd like to see them keep doing this. Like if they have a million different, like the Captain Picard show and the Starfleet Academy show and all the stuff we talked about, doing these little short things, you don't even need to do them focusing on known characters.
Yeah.
Or if you do, they don't need to be known characters from any of the shows that are currently on, that are currently making new episodes.
Sure.
Like if you want to do a series of minisodes focusing on, it might be hard to get big name people back just to do a 12-minute thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if Michael Dorn would want to come back as Worf just to shoot 12 minutes and then never be seen again.
Yeah.
But you could get experimental with these, or just not even focus them on a character. Like do an episode that focuses on like the origins of the Klingon Empire, or do a little mini-sode that focuses on an interesting moment in the history of the Borg or something. Like you could get a bit more experimental with these in the way that you wouldn't want to do a whole...
Or the evolution of the Organians.
Yeah, or whatever. Like something that you wouldn't even want to do a 6-hour TV miniseries on, or even a 90-minute TV movie. You could devote a little short, or like a trilogy of little shorts to a character or a major event or something, tie it into the shows that are currently airing to set them up. Or something, or not, just have it be completely its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope they continue to get more experimental. So the fact they're focusing one of these on a new character is promising, but I'd like to see them get even more experimental with it. And then the last bit of news this week, not really news, but we have the new Apple stuff in our hands.
Yes.
So I got a XS Max, and we both got new Apple watches.
Yep.
So I thought
yours has cellular, mine does not.
Right, on the watches, yeah. My phone also has cellular, but that's less remarkable.
Does it? Oh, okay.
So I thought we'd just talk for a few minutes about our impressions. So you don't have the phone, although you're tempted seeing some of the reviews of the new camera. I feel like we haven't really put the camera through its paces yet, because the photos we've taken are ones that probably would have turned out pretty good, even with the old phone.
Even in low light.
But I like it. I like having the bigger screen. I don't mind carrying around the bigger phone, because I carried around a Plus phone for a couple of years. And like I said, my suspicion was, after hearing some of the first impressions with it, and my suspicions were borne out, which is that when you're holding something which is basically all screen, your brain gets tricked into not thinking it's as big as it is. When you're holding something that has big bezels around it, you can tell it's big, because the screen to bezel ratio cues your mind about how big it is.
Yeah.
When you're just holding like a 6.4, I can't remember, screen with just like a little notch around the top, which is what your eyes don't even notice after a while. You don't, you know, like if you handed me one of the two new phones.
Yep.
I think I'd have to think for a second to think, like, wait, which one was I just handed? Because it's just screen. Like, if someone handed you a 6-inch screen versus a 7-inch screen, I'm not sure you would immediately be able to tell the difference without some sort of thing around it to give you a sense of scale. So I don't mind the size. I mean, it fits in my pocket. I don't even mind running with it. Although with the new features on the watch, I'm hoping to be able to just run without the phone in the future. And the screen, I do notice it's brighter. I do notice the improved color. I haven't tested out the stereo speakers or anything yet, but that'll be handy if you're recording
video.
Even watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem faster. I mean, I mostly just like having the bigger screen back, and so obviously that won't be worth it to spend a lot of money on the phone just to get a slightly bigger screen. But I do like having that bigger screen for playing games and for reading and for all the things that, you know, a big screen would be. Looking at photos, I mean, taking photos and video is even nicer on a bigger screen, but looking at them especially is really a big difference. And then as far as the watch is concerned, I think the watch is definitely the bigger upgrade. It's noticeably thinner.
Yep.
I can't really say whether it's lighter, because I went back to the stainless steel model, so it's literally like three times heavier than the old one was. The new larger screen is is great. Like yep. it almost looks like it's kind of the same way when you got an iPhone 10 for the first time.
Yeah.
It looks like a special effect. You're like, wait, where are the borders? Like you get right. this thing and you're looking at the watch face and it seems like the images are almost like overflowing off the sides. Mm-hmm. It's almost like an optical illusion.
Yeah.
But you can fit so much more. It's definitely a lot. I mean, you were coming from a Series 2, whereas I was coming from a Series 3.
Right.
So you probably notice even more than I do the increased speed and responsiveness.
Yes, I do. Finally, I can start a workout or, cancel it if I need to, or if something gets triggered, I can move back to a screen that I'm familiar with or that I intended to. Like, a lot of my activity on the watch actually centers around undoing something the baby did.
Yeah.
And the response time is a lot better, so I'm actually stress testing.
I haven't noticed a single instance, I don't think, of me trying to do something and it not being instantaneous.
Yeah.
Which is what you want. But exactly. I mean, before, even on my Series 3 watch, which was pretty fast, it's still a good device, there would be a couple of things, particularly like starting a new workout or whatever, where you'd feel like it would take an extra half second to kick in.
Or longer.
And a lot of the little features are nice. Like, I haven't really taken advantage of the fact that it has cellular yet, but there's going to be some situations where I'm going to like having that. But a lot of the newer features, like having the sort of haptic-based digital crown that gives you a little when you're scrolling through something is nice. I mean, I like those little features, the little haptic features on the phone, too, when you're scrolling through a timer or doing whatever. I think that adds a nice little bit of responsiveness. The speaker's louder. The screen is bigger, like we said, and brighter. The processor is much faster. And then you've got the new features, which we, you know, hopefully won't need to take advantage of yet, like fall detection and the EKG and so on like that, which isn't available quite yet anyway. It's a nice upgrade, and I'm glad that we got that one. The phone was definitely an indulgence, but I feel like this is something which makes a more noticeable impact in my daily life in terms of just not wasting time.
It definitely makes an impact.
And being able to get more information
quickly
too.
Yeah, especially since it's frustrating when I have such limited time. If my watch or my technology gets in the way of me completing a task or two, it feels like I'm being slowed down by something.
Well, I see you fighting with
control.
It sometimes, like when the baby hits something and you've got to cancel it, and you try to cancel it, and then you got to tap it several times just to.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating, yeah. And so it's nice to not have that anymore, and it's nice to just go downstairs to the gym we enjoy and start a workout without waiting and standing in front of the stupid machine, waiting for my watch to wake up.
And these are not specific to the new watches, but the new watchOS 5 features are really nice too, like the walkie-talkie feature, the automatic workout detection, beginning and end.
How
stuff
many
like that
party fouls do you think a walkie-talkie feature is gonna add to people's lives? Because it's really, really fun to use, but you kind of have to prearrange it. Which point you're like, why don't I just text the person?
I don't think you're supposed to leave it on constantly like we do, as indicated by the little badge that appears at the top of my watch face and drives me crazy. I think you're just supposed to turn on for specific. Like if you're going
specific
on
specific games,
yeah. Like I remember like thinking of ATP when Marco was saying like he and his family were taking like several cars to drive to their beach house or something, and they need to be able to stay in touch without constantly calling each other on the phones.
Yeah,
it'd be for something like that. Like you would turn it on for a day for a specific event or something, or you're at a party or you're trying to set up something or you're at a job site or whatever, and you turn it on for a few hours so that you can communicate easily with someone, and then you turn it off again. I don't think you're supposed to leave it on 24/7 like we do, but that's a handy feature too. Yeah, do you have anything else to say about the new stuff? And then, of course, next month, everybody's assuming there'll be another Apple event where they'll talk about new Macs and new iPads. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine
it looks like next month is going to be replete with acronyms centered around
more Apple
as well.
Acronyms. Yeah. But I mean, when you think about how nice it is to have a phone that goes edge to edge and a watch that goes edge to edge, holding a big iPad in your hand that is basically all screen is going to be pretty astounding.
I'm actually nervous.
I know
about
you're
that.
A little nervous.
I told
that.
You, and I'll explain to everybody why, because I fat finger things all the time as it is.
I don't
the
have that problem. Even when I handle your iPad, and it is a bigger problem with your iPad because your iPad has smaller
bezels
than I do. But I haven't. I've
got
to be aware of it as I'm moving it around. But
so much of my day is centered around doing something with an armful of baby that being able to handle something without worrying about fat fingering something is a concern of mine. So I
I don't think it'd be completely bezel-less.
I
think it'll just
I can't
be
attribute
like
it to my clumsiness. You
the
know?
Bezels that your current iPad has on the side will probably just be the length of the bezel all the way around.
I know. But
and that's where
be...
you hold it now, generally. When you're holding it in portrait, you're holding it by the side there anyway. So
yeah.
And you're able to do that by and large. It's mostly just when you're rotating it, it seems like that you accidentally do something. But I mean, how many times generally, I think we rotate it more than most people do because when we're reading comics, it's like one or two times per comic where we've got to rotate it around. But I think most people, they just like hold it in portrait or they hold it in landscape all the time.
And right, because they don't either watching rotate something it
that
much. Or...
So I think it's probably less of an issue. But yeah, it'll probably be something that'll happen every so often. But it's just sort of a trade-off that I don't really see any way around, much like there's trade-offs with the current phones. Like, you can't reach... If you're holding it in one hand, you can't reach stuff at the top of the screen. Like, you can't bring down Control Center with one hand on the Mac.
That's actually what I was going to say.
Physically possible. So there's trade-offs with any
new design. From the couple times that I took your new phone into... Like, picked it up here and there, I noticed that I don't think I want the bigger size back.
Yeah, but you've got stubby little troll fingers too.
tiny little elf hands. Yeah, it's a condition that I was born with, and I never grew out of it.
I can reach everything pretty much okay. I think it's hard to say because probably when I was using the Plus phones for a couple of years, I probably got into the habit of doing more stuff with two hands without really realizing it. But I think I can do most things with this phone, with one hand, with the exception of like tapping on a new notification that comes in or bringing down Control Center or Notification Center, I suppose. But for those things, I just use my other hand. And usually I have both hands free anyway. And if I don't, then I'm probably just, if it's something that I only need to use with one hand, then I can either just use Siri or do something on my watch or whatever. So it helps to have different,
about the
it helps to have all this stuff.
Using Siri with the watch is pretty awesome. You just raise it and you can have access to it.
Yeah, that's a watchOS 5 feature, but I'm not sure it's one that you would have gotten on your Series 2. I got it on my Series 3.
The microphones are different, or?
I think the microphones were the same. I think it would have been more a question of the battery life and the processor speed that would have been required to always be aware of the watch's position at all times, as opposed to like just listening for the keyword, which is a very low power process. I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, I'm glad we got.
But I think if I were to get the next phone, I think I'd go with the smaller size, just because it's easier for me to handle.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah, that's all I've got to say so far about it.
Yeah. So should we move on to our comic of the week?
I am ready.
So I'm assuming we picked the same comic of the week.
Was it Mr. Miracle?
So I think we both picked Mr. Miracle number 11.
Unbelievable. Yes.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean...
I laughed. I cried. I was scared.
You laughed, you cried. It was better than Cats?
It's true. what?
I don't know where I get that from. That's a thing that people would... I think they've said it. I don't know. There's a story behind that. That's more like an in-joke, I think, with me than it is with an actual thing that other people might have heard of.
Hilarious. This is the first time that I've ever read a comic that I was genuinely scared for the protagonists. Genuinely the first time that that's happened to me. In all the times that we've been reading, I was in the comics, but I was never actually genuinely scared. Here, I was literally scared for the little baby. I was scared for Mr. Miracle. I was scared for Big Barda because they took on Darkseid. And it was an amazing plan. Because as we suspected from last time and as we were led to believe, they were going to basically use their baby as bait. They don't want to give their baby up to Darkseid to raise as he will see fit or whatever, but they definitely know that they can't take down effectively an immortal being without some serious firepower or good wits or both. And the execution of their plan was so marvelous, and the beautiful family moments where he was encouraging his little boy, and he's like, I know you won't remember any of these words, and nothing that
that was the
say,
moment that got me.
Could.
Like a father saying goodbye to his baby son.
Yeah,
was
that was
sort of targeted directly at me. So
that
one got me pretty good.
Definitely.
And then there's the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Were you about to say something? I was just going to talk about
the ending a little bit now,
where it turns out that, who was it? It was Desaad, right? So Desaad's right there at Darkseid's right hand like he normally is. But after Darkseid is killed, Desaad is revealed to be really Metron, who's like the...
Whom I don't know, by the way.
Well, you know him a little. I mean, I think he's popped up in one or two comics you've read, and he was in a few episodes of various cartoons that you've seen.
So insignificant that I barely
I'm trying to think of an analogy that you might... I mean, he's like he seeks knowledge. He's from New Genesis, so he's generally more of a good guy than a bad guy. But he's really not on either side. He's just maybe mostly interested in understanding everything there is to know about the universe. Uh-huh. So he's like a seeker of knowledge.
Sure.
Really, even though he comes from New Genesis.
An impartial party.
So he's Desaad turns out to be Metron, and then Metron reveals that not necessarily that everything has been a dream or something like that, which is something that we've sort of had in the back of our head the whole time, that all this is like a near-death experience that Scott is having still lying in that bathroom bleeding out from his slit wrists. Mm-hmm. But all he really says is there is another world, and you see a two-page spread of all the heroes of Earth Zero, like the rebirth universe, like the universe we're reading about in all the other books.
Basically the heroes of the Justice League.
So we don't really know where... Well, the heroes of the Justice League too, but also other characters that are side characters that are...
Including Big Barda.
Unique. Yeah, exactly. And it was important to have that there. It was like, this is not... So I think that's there to tell us that this is not like our Scott and Barda just transported to another world or something. Like, no, they are different because there is a Mr. Miracle and Barda in the rebirth universe. We've seen them in other books.
Yep.
These are not them. Mm-hmm. So we don't know whether we're seeing... I mean, I guess saying there is another world is so ambiguous. Like, it could be that this is some sort of hallucination or trick by the anti-life equation or, like, vision sent from the source or something like that Scott is having.
Yep.
Or it could be literally they could be on, like, Earth 29 or something like that. But why Metron would be telling them that, like, what does that have to do with anything, right? Like, they all know that there's different Earths.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the other thing, too, is that usually, it sometimes they're not always super consistent with this, but one of the things that Grant Morrison set up that I really like is that there's the local multiverse, the 52 Earths, but there's only one Apocalypse in New Genesis. There's not 52 different versions of Darkseid.
They're outside.
Those things exist above the orrery of worlds that the 52 Earths sort of sit in.
Mm-hmm.
So different stories might portray Darkseid and Mr. Miracle and Big Barda and Highfather and Orion differently, but that's more just because they're so far above our understanding that our perceptions differ time to time in how we see them.
Mm-hmm.
Because to perceive, we can't truly perceive Darkseid. He is like an embodiment of some universal force.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see him as a guy with stone skin sitting in a little blue skirt on a throne, that's just because that's the way our minds can conceive him. So sometimes he looks a little different or acts a little different, whatever, but we're not only seeing one shade of Darkseid. We're not seeing the true Darkseid, but there is only one true Darkseid. There's not one for every Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it really could be, assuming Tom King is playing by those rules, and I'm sure at the very least he's aware of them because he knows his stuff. It's not like this is a different Earth version of Mr. Miracle because there shouldn't be one of those.
Right.
So this is something else entirely. Like when you say there is another world, that could mean that they are living in some sort of hallucination or vision or pocket dimension or something. So who knows? We're going to have to wait and see. But I feel like, I mean, I remember when we talked about issue one and we're like, well, they can't really go a year without us knowing whether this is just some hallucination of Mr. Miracles or not, can they? And it turns out they did. But I feel like early on, they played up, like, the art would glitch and you'd see weird things and people would say things that didn't make any
sense.
People
would look slightly different than they really do. Like Barda, you remember how in the first few issues we were wondering what the heck kind of hallucination it was because he was even noticing that his wife's eyes were a different color.
Yeah, like he forgot that Oberon was dead and then he got his wife's eye color wrong and like it's things were happening that seemed like they're happening in a weird like dreamlike pace instead of the way things would actually but I feel like once the baby came that sort of slowed down a little bit and you sort of forgot that aspect was still there and now it's kind of going to ramp up again. So this was the penultimate issue, so there's one more, but I don't know, I don't really know how I want this to end. I mean, if this is some unique temporary version of these characters and they go away at the end of the series and then we're left with the more traditional New Gods, because I don't think they're going to take this new status quo of the New Gods, where pretty much all the major New Gods are dead.
Yep.
With the, like, Highfather, Orion,
and a massive Light Ray, active war.
Darkseid, they're all dead.
Yeah.
And Mr. Miracle rules Apocalypse and New Genesis. And he's got, like, giving them a baby is one thing, but they wouldn't, I don't think they would wipe out all those Kirby creations and have that stick in the main universe.
Yeah.
So the options are, I guess, for all of this to be temporary and none of it to have any lasting effect, or maybe for like this version of Mr. Miracle, Big Barda, and their baby to move over to the main Earth and replace the ones that are currently there, if there is still one currently there, or maybe only their baby survives. Like they let their little temporary reality die, but the baby is saved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of the way that he was. Well, yeah. I don't know. Or they exchange. Like, I think they might do something that was just like a a reflection of the pact that he was part of when he was a baby. Like maybe they have to send their baby
to
Earth Zero in exchange for something, and so they can never see him again, but he gets to live, kind of like what was done with him. I don't know. I find it hard to believe that, as much as it's nice to have like a 12-issue story that's completely self-contained and that you can buy at a bookstore, some average reader can buy at a bookstore and not have to have it end on a to-be-continued or have to read a million other books to understand what's going on. It does seem like after investing a year in this version of these characters, to just have all of it not have
mattered.
It's like Alan Moore said, this is an imaginary story, aren't they all, right? But we as readers invested in an ongoing narrative of the DC universe want our year of emotional investment to have some dividend.
Yeah.
Well, there has been character growth, but we don't want those characters to end here. We want that growth to carry forward for years more.
Because then I'll
read
a different Mr. Miracle book and I'll be like, well, he doesn't have any of those character elements that I've come to.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Those conversations never happen. That reflection never happened.
I understand what you're saying. This is not a very different version of Mr. Miracle and Big Barda. It's just a version that focuses more on the more
down-to-earth
aspects of their personality, but it is recognizably. So I feel like some of that emotional investment you've got for these characters would carry over to a more traditional interpretation. But yes, I agree with you that this is a very specific
iteration. I hope they don't do what season 3 of Dallas did, like, oh, it was all a dream, you know?
I think King is a good enough writer to, even if it does end with these versions of the characters going away, that there'll be something there that
sticks.
rewards the reader for investing in. Because he was so, it'd be one thing to have it be a twist, like the Dallas thing was a twist.
Yeah.
But because the seeds were planted from issue one, that none of this might be real and might be temporary.
Mm-hmm.
If that ends up being the way it ends, oh, it turns out now this was real and it was all temporary. We're like, well, yeah, like that's what you told us at the beginning. Like that's not. There's no impact there, right? I mean, yeah, you'd be sad to say goodbye to this version of these characters, but it would be predictable. So I feel like there's going to be something there, some twist or some inversion of that. Like, it turns out everything else is a dream. And like, I don't know. Like, we'll see. But I feel like there's going to be something there that reconciles this in such a way that you feel like you haven't... It's hard to talk about this because it's like you haven't wasted a year of your... If you enjoyed the story and it meant something to you and it like made me cry several times... Because of the fact that I'm a new father, like, I'm not going to forget that. Like, 30 years from now, I'm still going to remember moments in this story. And that's, you know, that's the important thing. That's what an artist wants to convey.
Yep.
But when you're an artist working in a corporate machine like the DC Universe, I think you also want your work to contribute something to the larger tapestry.
Yeah.
Aside from people being like, oh, I remember that great series 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, I remember, like, people remember Kingdom Come, but... Kingdom Come is not an ongoing concern because it didn't really there were versions of those characters that ended up being moved into the DC universe generally, but nothing really persisted from that in any permanent way.
Yeah.
And so Kingdom Come is a thing that I think like a lot of young readers now are just sort of tangentially aware of.
Yes.
Like they're aware, oh, the Crisis was something that happened like 20 years before I was born. I don't need to read that. Kingdom Come was some Elseworlds thing back when Elseworlds were even a thing.
Yeah.
Like, even the line that it was part of, down the, of course, the rebranding it now is part of Black Label. But, you know, it's. I feel like the writers want something to... They want to contribute something to the toy box.
They want to leave a footprint in that,
And that's why I think that maybe the thing to do would be to have these versions fade away, sacrifice themselves or something, but their son lives on and gets raised by the Mr. Miracle and Big Barda on the main Earth or something like that. In some way, there needs to be something that carries through. So we'll see what it is. But we're working with so little information now. Like, all we have is that one line, there is another world, and we have no idea what that could mean. So,
right.
Anyway. Yeah. So should we move on to your pop quiz?
Yes, I'm ready.
So this week, I'm going to be quizzing you about Stargirl.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh,
all right.
No.
Number one.
Uh-huh.
Which writer created Stargirl?
Geoff Johns.
Correct.
Yay.
Number two.
Phew.
What is her real name?
Courtney. I don't know. Do I get half credit for that?
Well, yeah, you get literally half credit. Courtney Whitmore.
Whitmore. Oh, shucks.
All right. Number three.
Yes.
Who was the character named after?
Geoff Johns' sister.
Right. Whose name was also Courtney.
Yes.
Hence being named after her.
But what
I mean is that it wasn't just named after her, but also apparently was modeled after her personality.
Yeah.
I assume by that he means like her Stargirl's later personality and not the way she was sort of a teenage brat. Although maybe his sister was a teenage brat when they were that age. I don't know. But
maybe.
I feel like a lot of that's probably in there. Number four.
Huh.
What was the character's original code name?
Stripe?
No, you're in the right.
I thought it was star. I thought it was Star and Stripe. Stripes or
well, the series was called and Stars and Stripe, but that was just because her original name would have been
Stars.
Wouldn't have fit on a marquee.
Oh. Superstar Girl Buffonet.
No.
I don't know.
Star Spangled Kid.
Oh, yeah, no.
All right.
Why wouldn't that have fit on a marquee?
Well, I think Star Spangled Kid and well, I don't know. I mean, I think originally
there are lots of longer titles than that. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
Star Spangled Kid and Stripe is a long title, though.
So, especially Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, but people know who Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps are. When you're launching a new series with versions of characters that are new based on legacies that haven't existed for 40 years, I think you want something a little punchier.
That's fair.
I don't know. Maybe he wanted to call it that, but marketing said, no, you call it this. And it was literally his first series, so he didn't have a lot of sway back then.
Whoops, yeah.
All right. Number five.
Yeah.
What was a mistype on my part? What was the original superhero identity of her new stepfather?
I thought it was Starman. No.
No.
Hang on. I got this one. Something patriotic. He was, I don't know, Liberty Man.
No, Stripesy.
Stripesy.
So originally you had Star Spangled Kid and Stripesy, and then
okay,
you wore the stripe armor and the...
Yes.
Right. All right, number six. From whom did she receive her cosmic staff?
From her father.
No, that is... Well...
Actually, I mean, her stepfather.
Originally who? Originally, that wasn't what she found in, like, the attic that gave her the ability
that
to
wasn't
be a superhero.
The original
she
story?
Found the original Star-Spangled Kid's cosmic belt, which is what the original Star-Spangled Kid... She got the cosmic rod years later, and when she got it, she changed her name from Star-Spangled Kid to Stargirl. I feel like the new stuff is going to gloss over that and just have her find the cosmic rod and be Stargirl from, because they're literally calling the series Stargirl.
Yeah.
But originally in the comics, no, she was given it by someone and that's when she changed her name.
Huh. Okay.
Do you know who? Well, think about it. If she changed her name to Stargirl, who might she have been given it by? Someone belonging to what lineage?
Stars.
You're close.
Was his name Star?
No.
Starman. Yeah, okay.
She was given the cosmic rod by Jack Knight, the seventh Starman.
Jeez. Okay.
I want to say seven. Or something like that. All right. Number seven. Which super team is she a member of?
She's not a Teen Titan. She's not... I thought she was just in the Justice League. As young as she is, I thought that's where she is.
In some of the cartoons, maybe, because in the cartoons, everybody
they
is.
Just
in the
shortened
in Justice League
everything.
Unlimited, everybody was in the Justice League. But
that is kind of strange, isn't it? Because we were watching Young Justice and all that stuff, and,
well, she's
and
not
she
in
never.
There.
I know that's what I'm saying. But
they
she
haven't
was
gotten
just
to her generation yet, though. She's like of the.
Oh, really?
Well, she's like a more of the Wallace West, Damian Wayne, Emiko Queen generation, you know?
She wasn't an outsider, though, was she? No.
No. Well, think about it. And when she, what is the premise of this new show?
What team was she a part of
which she appeared
the
in?
The Liberty people. The ones that have Uncle Sam as their, you know, leader,
no.
mascot or whatever.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
I'm out of teams.
The Justice Society.
Okay, but that predates everybody by like 45 years.
Right.
So she was a character from that generation?
No,
she's
the Justice
running
Society
with
is,
Alan Scott and Jay Garrick.
She was before.
For real?
Before the reboot, sure, because they were still alive, and they brought in new, like the
new
series,
blood.
The
okay.
series that you saw me reading on the DC Universe app. That was all about the original Justice Society members now being like close to 100 years old, but
yeah.
kept being kept young by the Speed Force or the Green Flame or Wildcat Has Nine Lives or whatever.
The staff, apparently.
She's like a teenager, but the original Justice Society members who fought in World War II, bringing together new heroes that
right.
were the descendants of their original teammates to form a new Justice Society.
So now she's a descendant of other... Oh my goodness,
well, in a way, she's the stepdaughter of one of the original sidekicks from the 40s, right? Because she's Stripesy's stepdaughter.
That still doesn't put her very much far away from the 40s.
Well, Stripesy was... It's a complicated thing about how all of the original characters from the 40s could
still
have kids that are young enough to be teenagers or in their 20s now, as opposed to having grandkids or great grandkids. But that's
right.
the problem that you have when you've got a rolling timeline
yep.
but you want to keep the Justice Society anchored to the 40s, is that the farther you get away from that, it's like, okay, these people lived 100 years, but why did they wait till they were 80 to start a family? But it's like, originally that wasn't a problem, because when you introduced the original Infinity Incorporated, which were the kids of the Justice Society,
they were just veterans.
The 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
And so you had the characters that were around in their 40s, and now they had kids that were in their 20s.
Yep.
But now it's 50 years later, and the Infinity Young characters are still supposed to be young.
So you say,
well, they were all kept young by various forces, but for whatever reason,
they didn't start families until much later.
So Stripesy, when he married Courtney's mother, looked like he was, you know, 40 or whatever, but he was probably closer to like
80.
Biologically, he was probably closer to 80, but they just don't dwell on that.
Sure.
But you remember she's appeared in the Justice... I mean, I was reading a Justice Society comic on the TV and she was in that.
Very vaguely, but it's so confusing because of what you just said. And I was like, wait a minute, so she's of the older generation?
Well, it's not that confusing. You have the Justice League, which are like the heroes everybody knows in the Justice League. And then you have the Justice Society, which originally was like all the old heroes. And then over time became the surviving old heroes.
Yep.
And then newer heroes that were carrying on the legacies of the old heroes. You don't see people like Sandman or Hourman or Johnny Thunder or like that in the Justice League. Those are like JSA-associated names, and just whoever the current bearer of that name is just tends to be in the Justice Society. And it's the same with like Star Spangled Kid or Star Girl or, you know, Power Girl or whatever. There's certain ones that kind of move back and forth, like Red Tornado has been in both and stuff like that. Wildcat, like if there's a new Wildcat or a new Hawkman, they're probably gonna be in the Justice Society, not the Justice League.
Right.
That was something that Geoff Johns kind of did actually when he brought the Justice Society back in the early 2000s, late 90s, is that he kind of made it a book not just about like the old superheroes, but he made it a team about legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he brought in Jack Knight, the son of the original Starman, and Courtney, who was the stepdaughter of the original Stripesy, and Black Canary, who was the daughter of the original Black Canary, and Sand, who was the ward of the original Sandman. And so you had them there with the original surviving members, and it kind of made an interesting generation gap kind of team, where it was almost like the younger heroes were being trained by the older heroes in a way, which is
sort
something
of
you
like
don't really
Wildcat is also Wildcat's son.
Yeah, well,
my
then
own
he created
an
a second Wildcat, but it's something you don't really get in the Justice League, or it was something you got in Justice League Unlimited a little bit, which was really like a merging of the Justice League and Justice Society from the comics. It was something you don't really get in Teen Titans or The Outsiders or the Justice League or whatever, is this sort of like the older heroes teaching the younger heroes thing.
Yeah, the mentor-mentee
people
relationships.
In those series tend to be peers,
mm-hmm.
or at least roughly. Like in Teen Titans, sometimes you have like, you know, Robin is training the new Teen Titans, but like in the current series, they're all older than him, but he's just the most badass, so he's the one training them.
Sure.
But here you've got heroes who fought in World War II, and they're training, you know, the younger heroes. So that was something that... So anyway, it's a long way of saying, like, it'll be interesting because the Justice Society is obviously coming back. Doomsday Clock is hinting at Alan Scott and Johnny Thunder and all these other characters. When Geoff Johns brings them back, I wonder if it'll just be the old guard, or if he'll bring back that whole legacy aspect too, and have it, because I feel like that's what the Justice Society is to me, isn't just the old heroes, although it is also that, but it's also the idea of this multi-generational thing. Like, it's something that DC didn't have for a long time, and hopefully has again, where, yeah, it sounds kind of ridiculous that there have been 8 Starmen, but there's also something kind of cool about, like, every decade had its own Starman, and there's a legacy there, and they're like, they're the son of, it's kind of crazy that you have, like, well, you see, Golden Age Wonder Woman married Steve Trevor and had a daughter, but then they were erased from history, but then she got together with Hawkman's son, and they had another daughter, and then they had a son who was the guy who was the Hawkman's son was Silver Scarab, and then he was Dr. Fate, but he was also Sandman for a little while in there, and then their son became the new Dream, and it's like it's complicated and involves, like, 5 different legacies of DC Comics, but there's something kind of cool about having like this family tree of history.
Yeah.
Like the DC universe that's existed since World War II and all these legacies that have carried through and through like marriage and like adoption and time travel and all these other weird things forms like this sort
web.
Of bizarre family tree where
family
like,
web. It's
Hawkman's
not even a tree
legacy
anymore.
Is related to Dr. Fate's, is related to Wonder Woman's, is related to Neil Gaiman's The Endless, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just through one line. Anyway. So anyway, it's a long way of saying that. But yes. long answer to short question. She was a member of the Justice Society.
Okay.
All right. Number 8. What was the first TV series that the character appeared in?
In live action? Or cartoon?
I didn't specify.
Then I have to go back to, I think she appeared in the Superman animated cartoon.
No.
She didn't?
No, she did not appear in Superman.
Well, then I already failed the question.
Yes, you did.
Hang on, Tom Welling thing, the Superboy in the Smallville, that's the name of the
show. Actually, yes, that is the correct answer.
Sweet.
Jeff Johns,
I didn't know which one predated
what. Not surprisingly, Jeff Johns wrote basically one episode a year for the last few seasons of that show, and he did a two-part, probably the best episode of the show, or at least my favorite for sentimental reasons, is the two-part JSA episode that he did, where it had Hawkman, Dr. Fate, and Stargirl in it, and so that was the first time that she appeared in TV.
Cool.
It was a pretty decent, and then she appeared a few more times after that. It was a good version of the character.
Because I know she was animated in some cartoon
form
or another.
Well, that leads naturally into the last question, which is, name two other TV series that the character has appeared in.
Justice League is one.
Careful with the specifics. Justice League?
I can't remember all the titles of the shows that we watched.
The show had two titles, so there's not that many to choose from.
Justice League. I choose Justice League.
All right. Well, that's wrong.
Damn.
Was that being too subtle?
Yes. Justice League of America? Is that
no,
the name of it?
No, that was not a show.
Justice Society is not a show.
Justice
either.
League Unlimited is the one you're thinking of.
Yes. Okay. And if she didn't appear in Superman... Oh, what about the New Adventures of Batman and Superman, or whatever
nope.
you called it.
She wasn't in... Her appearance in Justice League Unlimited was her first appearance in that whole Bruce Timm universe. She hadn't even been created when those other shows were on.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She was created in, like, the early 2000s, and...
Yeah, you're right.
Superman aired in 1996 or something like that.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Then I guess
you've seen all of, with the possible exception of that Smallville episode, which I think you saw some of on the treadmill at one time. You've seen all of her other TV appearances. You just can't remember them.
Okay, what was the name of the show where they did the awesome Music Meister episode?
Brave and the Bold?
Yeah, that.
I can't really give you that point because you literally could not remember the name of the show, and that's the whole point of the question is to name the show.
But so, you said where did she, which she, shows did she appear? Appeared, I was she, like, that show that did the thing that
she
we
appeared
liked.
A couple of times there. She appeared a bunch of times in Justice League Action, which is a show that nobody remembers even existed. And she appeared a couple of times in Legends of Tomorrow as part of the Justice Society and then one
terrible.
Time in Camelot.
Yeah, no, I was not a fan of her portrayal.
Well, I mean, there's nothing to be a fan of or to not like, in my opinion, because they didn't really give her any depth or development. She was just there.
It's so, true. I kind of... okay, so I have to put on my feminist hat on this one because, yet again, the guy characters, as fleeting as their appearance was and as two-dimensional as all of their portrayals were, I feel like the guys got more to
do than
the girls.
I think you're forgetting that they plucked Amaya out of that team, who was a woman, and she is exponentially more developed than any of the other members on that team.
Fair. Very fair.
Second to her, I guess you would have, like, Our Man, who was there for one episode, and Obsidian, just because they brought him back later and got Lance Henriksen to play him.
No, you're forgetting, what's his name, Nathan's grandfather.
Yeah, you saw him too.
That was
times.
A pretty good bit of character development. I'm still saying.
Yeah, but he wasn't played by Lance Henriksen, so I feel like Old Obsidian is by far the coolest.
Fair, yeah. Old,
but this I agree. This kick-ass elderly gay man superhero.
Yep.
In like the 80s mm-hmm. was probably one of the best character that with possible exception of Amaya.
It's true, but
who I like, but it was the best thing that incarnation of the JSA gave us.
It's true. They did give Amaya a good deal of awesomeness, but I think that was just, I feel like that entire Justice Society plot thread was just an excuse to bring her in, have Vixen on the show without.
Well, I don't know. It was weird to have them do it that way because Vixen has never been a member of the Justice Society. So if they wanted to get Vixen in there, they could have just put Vixen
they
on
just
the team.
Invented, yeah.
I mean,
they couldn't get Magellan.
Right, so they needed to have it be a Vixen from the past, but they could have just been traveling to the 60s or 70s and gotten.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess they figured, like, it can't be her mother because we know what happened to her mother.
Yeah.
So it had to be her grandmother, which would put it in the 40s. And if she was going to be a superhero in the 40s,
why not
put the Justice Society in it? So I kind of get it. Plus, you know, seeing the Justice Society in live action was. It's going to be a lot less rare when Stargirl comes out, because that's the whole premise of the show, is that she tries to discover what happened to the Justice Society. But so we're going to be getting a lot of them, hopefully. I mean, maybe we'll finally get Jay Garrick and Alan Scott in live action, which has literally never happened, with the exception of one montage in the Smallville episode. Oh, that's such a good episode. There's one. I don't want to spoil it, because I feel like I do want you to see it eventually. Like, we should literally just watch Geoff Johns' episodes.
Okay.
We should watch
I'm at peace with that.
The two-part JSA episode. We should watch the Legion episode, which is the first time the Legion was ever in live action. And then we should watch the Booster Gold Blue Beetle episode, which was also the first time those two characters were ever in live action.
Yeah. You know me. I don't mind rewatching. But I don't mind rewatching like longer series of
Smallville
shows.
Was 10 years.
10 years of a show, but knowing full well, I mean, I used to watch that show intermittently. I wasn't like a weekly tuner inner or whatever you would call me. But I know that there's so much repetitive drama here and there that I just that right there is kind of the deterrent.
We've talked about Smallville before. I really liked the first few seasons, the high school years, even though they were kind of repetitive, but it was, I think a lot of it was probably that was a novelty at the time. Like seeing some of this stuff in live action was so rare.
Yep.
But then I feel like the middle seasons where he wasn't in school anymore, but he still wasn't leaving Smallville.
Yep.
Was sort of a weird middle sag in the show, but then in season 8, when he actually moved to Metropolis and started working at the Daily Planet and being a superhero, albeit one that didn't call himself Superman or wear a costume, I feel like they had basically complete turnover behind the scenes at that point, too. The original showrunners left after the first 7 seasons, and that's also when Kristen Kreuk and Michael Rosenbaum left the show, and so you had a lot of turnover, and like Chloe and Clark were like the only two, and Lois, who'd been there since season 4, were like the only continuing characters, and they basically like rebooted the show. Mm-hmm. They could have called it Metropolis at that point, and it sort of became a DC Universe show that just happened to center on a young Clark Kent. Like every episode, some new hero or villain from other part of the DC Universe would show up. Like, oh, here comes,
Didn't they do a Darkseid once?
They did do Darkseid by the end. Darkseid was the final guy that he fought in the last episode. Okay. But there was there was an awesome sequence in the Justice Society two-parter where, of course, the whole premise of the show was that the world had never seen anything like Clark Kent before.
Yep.
Like before the Kryptonite meteor shower created the meteor freaks, and before Clark Kent started to develop his powers, there hadn't been any what we would now call metahumans, although the show didn't call them that, in the world anymore. But much like with the Marvel movies or the DC movies or whatever, the longer you live in that universe, the more you kind of want to backfill it a little bit with other interesting things that nobody ever knew that these characters existed decades ago. So the Justice Society had existed in World War, and I think they actually tied it to World War II. I think they just said like decades ago or years ago. They had existed, but they had been, the world had forgotten them because they'd worked covertly, and then it had all been covered up. And so these people had existed, but nobody really remembered them. And so there's this awesome sequence where Clark Kent like goes down to the Daily Planet archives and he finds like the only remaining, or Lois and Chloe have like managed to dig up something, and he puts it on like an old film reel, and he's projecting it. And it doesn't really make any sense that all of this would have been video recorded, but it's kind of like a device. And he sees like the original Justice Society members being like rounded up and like hounded by like McCarthy and you know, like rounded up by the cops and tormented, and their families being like abused and arrested and so on. And you see like the surviving members behind bars, and so you get a little bit like, you see like a hand holding the bars, and you see like the green ring on his hand, and it's unmistakably Alan Scott's ring, because his ring is like this huge lantern.
It's not streamlined
at all. And then you go, they have like the JSA museum, and you walk through, which is the thing that I like in the comics too, when the JSA has a museum, because they're all about legacy. And you go through and you have like the original Hawkgirl's mace is there. And then you see Jay Garrick's iconic helmet and all this other, and Green Lantern's lantern and Wildcat's boxing gloves and stuff like. And so there were hints in them there, and you see like whatever extra they had portraying Alan Scott's hand was like the closest we've ever come to Alan Scott in live action. So if we get stuff like that in this new Stargirl series, then I'll be really excited, because the way the movies are going, I don't know if we're ever going to get. I mean, if there are any justice in the world, much in the same way that we're getting Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know, they're doing an Eternals. They just hired a director to do Marvel's Eternals movie, which is like what they're going to do now instead of Inhumans, I guess, since that bombed on TV. But we would be getting like a Legion movie and a JSA movie and so on. Like, imagine. I mean, they kind of already did this with Wonder Woman in World War I, I guess. But like the original, as they were called back then, Mystery Men, fighting on the side of the Allies in World War II. But then you do a sequel where it's 10 years later, and the world is sort of turned on them because they won't reveal their true identities, and so are they really pinkos or whatever, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And you get the hearings, and they have to disappear from the world, and then you do the, and that's the way that the second movie ends, on like a dark Empire Strikes Back style cliffhanger, and then you do the third movie where it's again later, and the world needs them again, and they have to come back together alongside the children of their original members that passed away or whatever, and
yep.
and keep the dream alive and so on. Like, oh man, like a trilogy of JSA movies would be so awesome, but we're probably never going to get it, at least not in this iteration of the DC movie universe. Maybe after this version that was started by Zack Snyder, sort of, you know, unless it really finds its footing with these next few movies, assuming it, you know, I hope it does, but if it kind of peters out over the next few years and then they wait a few years and then they reboot it again, hopefully that's the version where we'll get like the Legion and the Teen Titans and the as much as I enjoy the Marvel movies, this will be the last thing I'll say and then I'll stop ranting. As much as I enjoy the Marvel movies, the fact that we got a Guardians of the Galaxy movie before we got like Omega Man or Legion or any of like the awesome DC sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
Like an Adam Strange movie or a Legion of Superheroes, like teen heroes in the future, like it writes itself. Like you get the young adult audience that would go to that because it's kind of like, you could have like a romance soap opera-ish element to it, you know?
Yeah.
You could get like the Divergent or Hunger Games audience coming in there, and then you've got the fact that it's superheroes and the fact that it's in the future, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, that could be huge, but, you know, now if they were to come out with a Legion movie, people would just say, oh, they just tried to do like teen Guardians of the Galaxy, basically.
Yeah, because nobody will get it.
Because people won't know that... Yeah,
this isn't people won't understand that
Legion has been
time.
Around since like 1960, and the Guardians came around about 20 years later, and it wasn't even this version of the Guardians. It was like Yondu and the guy that Sylvester Stallone played, and those old guard that they hinted at the end of Guardians 2, not the newer version that was created by, that was assembled by Abnett and Lanning, you know, 15 years ago, and that's what they made the movie out of. But anyway, so you got, that's a long way of going around about the quiz. You got, let's see.
I think 4 out of 1, or 3.5.
1.5, hold on, 1.5.
Yeah.
2.5. Uh-huh. This is very exciting radio.
Yes. And then the next question with the... I got the cosmic staff.
Yeah, you got about 3.
I got 3.5.
3 or 3.5. Out of 9.
Out of 9? Oh.
You've done worse.
Hey, wait a minute. No, I got some of the number 9 stuff. I named...
You got her first TV series after a couple of attempts, and then you got like one other series that she appeared in eventually when I had to tell you the name of it. So I give you a half point for that one.
Okay. Well, that's 4 out of 9. That's not bad.
And that's it for the show.
Yep. Yes. So if you would like to reach out to us, we have an email address, mailbag@smartspodcast.com. Our website is www.smartspodcast.com. Our Twitter handle is @smartspodcast. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/smartspodcast. How about a funny sound for us?
I can think of one.
How about... Shing!
What was that?
Stargirl staff.
Ooh.